You're probably sick of me saying this, but it's great to be here. And I keep saying this too, but I want to thank Dwight for, well, thank Blair for marrying up in height so that I could wear your vesting this evening, today. And last night, my brother in Jamaica called me, and I was telling him that I was going to speak today, and I was telling him about your fantastic pastor, Blair, and how generous she was, how non-competitive, how open, how kind she was, and welcoming. And he said, that's a woman. And I must say that while women might not be the solution, they're certainly one of the key ones in terms of being leaders of our communities. Thank you, Blair. And by the way, I'm married to one of them, Sandra. She's sitting right here. So I speak from many multi-leveled experiences. As a black man in the West, a descendant of slaves and an American Christian, I ask you to indulge me for just a few minutes of your life today, which mostly has been very different from mine, to see the gospel through my eyes. You might see how Malcolm X's cynical phrase would appeal to me. We didn't land on Plymouth Rock. Plymouth Rock landed on us. And why recent political developments sound to me like make America hate again, not make America great again. A slave doesn't really care whether he is a Jamaican slave or an American slave. She just wants to be free. He just doesn't want to be owned and ruled by the whims of someone who bought or inherited him for his own profit and pleasure, who can sell him on a whim and whip him for a slight. That was all of my generations in the West till my old dear grandfather, the last slave in the family, great-grandfather. Nothing in American political history would have mattered much to a slave until the abolition of slavery in 1865. No slave cared who was president of the United States from 1776 to 1885. It doesn't matter. No president would have mattered to a slave until Abraham Lincoln. And none would have mattered much after that, until 1968 and the bestowing of full civil rights, and no president mattered much until Presidents Kennedy and Johnson. No presidency would have fulfilled the dreams of slaves or modern American, African Americans than the presidency of Barack Obama. For African Americans, for me, no presidents have been more significant and memorable than Lincoln, Kennedy, Johnson, and Obama. If you asked me to give a biblical explanation, I would paraphrase Jesus in this way. When we were hungry, they fed us, sort of. Naked, they clothed us. Constrained, they set us free. Downtrodden, they lifted us up. In the margins, they brought us forward. They considered us when we were the least among all Americans, when we were lepers, blind, deaf, mute, lost, beggars. All the people Jesus stopped to heal, they heard our cry. This is how African Americans see American history, and American Christianity. So as I read the scriptures, I also read them through that lens. All of it, all the scriptures. You can imagine then that I'm totally in love with Jesus. They say he came to set the captive free. They say he himself was despised and rejected, a man of sorrows, acquainted with grief. Wow, that's slave talk. I'm thinking maybe if he rode in a Chevy instead of on a donkey into Jerusalem, he would get pulled over for some vehicular malfunction by the local authorities. But God promoted him and made him sit at his right hand. Can you see how a black man might love the gospel? So, what does this have to do with transfiguration and passing of prophetic mantles? As Elijah's being transported into heaven, Elisha, his protege and successor, is accompanying him, and he won't let his master out of his sight, despite even Elijah's rebuffs. He wants to be there when Elijah goes because he wants a blessing. He follows Elijah like a duck on a June bug, as a friend of mine would say, or like white on rice. He won't take his eyes off of him. Indeed, Elijah tells him, if he keeps his eyes on him, no matter what, he will get that double portion of blessing that he seeks. And he does it. In spite of the fiery horses and the chariots, the whirlwind and the traumatic and overwhelming distractions, he does not take his eye off Elijah. By the way, the title of my sermon today is Don't Look Away. Forgot to tell you that. And then we come to Jesus and his three disciples, Peter, James, and John. And Jesus takes them aside on a hike up the hills. And as they are looking, he starts to glow. And his clothes become whitest white, and guess who shows up? Elijah. And look, Moses. Wow, this is great. But Jesus tells them not to tell anyone till he's raised from the dead. So it couldn't have been that urgent. It almost seems like Jesus just wanted to share the kind of alone times he had with some of his closest friends. But theologically, it doesn't really rise to the top of his lessons. When I think of the gospel significances, I really think of two other stories. The crucifixion, which we all stare at fastidiously, and which his disciples avoided deliberately, and his ascension, which was witnessed by hundreds, and they couldn't take their eyes off of him. So I ask myself the question, as we follow our master, when do we look away from him, and when do we look at him? Can we look at Jesus when he is the bruised slave, or when he makes himself a servant to the slave, or do we look away till he's ready to glow or ascend? It seems to me that American Christianity has mastered the spiritual art of looking away and staring at just the right times. We look away from the cross and stare transfixed at the transfiguration. and the ascension. And that's why we have become so faithful at worshiping and revering Jesus and so pitiful at following him. If it requires sacrifice, we look away. If his teachings are countercultural, we look away. If he doesn't flatter us, our country, our family, our denominations, we look away. But when it's a feel-good moment, we are transfixed. While preparing this talk today, I thought of the churches that left North Minneapolis as civil rights and fair housing laws were passed, when neighborhoods were homogenous and built around ethnic and denominational solidarity, Christians looked at each other, reached out to each other, embraced and helped each other. But when the laws were changed and inferior and different people moved in, Christians looked away and moved away. And even today in North Minneapolis, where there are Hmong and African Christians, African American and white Christians, this hour right now is still the most segregated, even in the most diverse Northside community of Minneapolis. We look away at diversity and stare transfixed at homogeneity. We stare at easy diversity. It doesn't matter if you're short or tall, big or small, young or old. We stare lovingly at that diversity. But rich and poor, black and white, we look away. It's too hard. And so the misery is visited on the disadvantaged by our culture, our economy, our history, and our egos persist unaddressed by the reconciling church, because when there is a need and we have the answer, our eyes are averted. And when there is pain and we have the medicine, we're too far. And when there is a scream, "Jesus of Nazareth, have mercy on me," we're way out of earshot. As I have considered the historical injustices of our nation, whether slavery or Jim Crow, the suppression of and abuse of women, the neglect of children, the insult and exploitation of the stranger and the alien, and considered our great church and its influence on its leaders, I ask myself, whose congregations did our presidents belong to? Who oversaw the inequities of our progress and the progress? I discovered some interesting facts. Here's the denominational breakdown of our presidents. Congregationalist, 1. Catholic, 1. You know who that is? That's right, Kennedy. Southern Baptist, 2. You want to guess? Carter and Bill Clinton. And then Northern Baptist, 2. Disciples of Christ, 2. Dutch Reformed, 2. Quaker, 2. United Methodist, 4. Unitarian, 4. Presbyterian, 8. Episcopalian, 11. Unspecified, meaning more than one. Obama, he had Baptist, Episcopalian, and Methodist. He's more mixed up denominationally than racially. And that's how they break down. There are a couple no stated preference. One was Lincoln. So it's interesting to me that perhaps two presidents who carried the burden of race most, Obama was a what do you call the dogs who are mixed? A mutt. And Lincoln was a mutt. Their loyalties were not so strong to any philosophy or theology. Now, President Trump is a sort of a Congregationalist. He attended Marble Collegiate Church, I think it's a Congregational church. Norman Vincent Peale was his pastor when he was a boy. He wrote the book, The Power of Positive Thinking. And if you go see The Shape of Water, you'll see a little inference in there to that. Watch for that. And, of course, Norman Vincent Peale, Power of Positive Thinking, was a kind of a social, personal, philosophical resiliency builder. And he kind of outgrew the church and became a draw because of his philosophical strain. He was kind of a depression baby. So you can imagine how his appeal to that generation of reassurance and you can do it appealed to them theologically. And his church was full of businessmen, including Donald's father. By the way, it was on the New York Times bestseller list for 186 weeks. So I'll let you draw your conclusions about our presidents. I'll just ask, if a future president were to be in this congregation today as a young person, what kind of follower of Christ would she or he be as president, and how far behind would they walk? How much could he or she hear the cries of those still trapped in disadvantage? Consider this. For the first time in known history, a mainline, mostly white denomination has moved its headquarters into a mostly black community on West Broadway in North Minneapolis. Congratulations, Episcopalians. This has not made the news, even though it is never been done. Probably the history of this country. The press is looking away. But I encourage you, St. Matthew's, to look and stare. Do not avert your eyes. Let's not lose this moment by making it merely symbolic. Before you think of having another worship service to worship Jesus, please consider following him wherever he goes, even if it's on West Broadway. God bless you.